I'm just getting in my chair. Couple of announcements first. Announcements. I'll try not to mess them up. We still do that at Maranatha Church. We will have a baptism service at the Ashelmans after the deacons' meeting, which follows the Lord's table. Which means as follows. I don't know how long the deacons' meeting will take. It depends. We've got some reorganization to do. So we'll see how that goes. Continue to pray for us in this regard. I'm speaking of the function of the board to keep the operation of this church running smooth through it all. Okay? So we'll have, following this Bible class and the Lord's table, we'll have that meeting and get out there when we can. And we have a couple candidates, so that's great. We still believe that believers, there are two rituals, and that we believe that one of them is the Lord's table, which we do every other month. Usually it was the second Sunday, but we had to change this time. The observance of the Lord's table and the ritual of baptism by immersion. I understand that the pool is heated, so you don't need to worry. About froze to death last year. But it was memorable. We will be having a prep school parent-teacher meeting this coming Sunday, the 27th. If you're a parent or a teacher or someone who works in the prep school, we ask that you meet. It will be at this time. Second session will be completely devoted to that. Shouldn't take the whole time, so everybody can be briefed on what we're trying to do through our history. Which we have done is provide an environment for the little ones to learn Bible doctrine. Okay? Let's go. It is? Okay. 2:00 baptism. I'll try to make it. All right. Just a couple points as we move on here. The words eternal fire should settle the argument with respect to the permanency of the judgment awaiting negative or unbelievers. This phrase occurs here and in Matthew 18:8-25:41. Notice that both, I'm on page 28.61, notice that both, that in both of these examples, and the one before, it makes mention of the eternal aspect of judgment awaiting the culprits. The first one specified the angels taken out of circulation. The second one, a destruction of an entire group of cities all at once because of the degree and level of this vice. No such fate befell the Exodus generation, only temporal wrath. They stepped into temporal wrath, premature deaths, all kinds of ways, but you'll meet them in heaven. You'll meet them in the afterlife. One other reference to Sodom and Gomorrah in the Bible, it's an interesting one, found in Revelation 11, which I didn't... I think it's... 11:8, in connection with the event of the martyrdom of the two witnesses in the tribulation. Of course, their ministry is a really big deal. They get worldwide attention because... Not just because who they are, This is why the trib and everything. This is a drama that you know can't make up. It's unbelievable. We have two people coming. We have four people coming back from the past. Two bad guys and two good guys. The two bad guys are the Antichrist and the false prophet, who I tentatively think the false prophet is Nostradamus. He was anti-Catholic, and God will put into the mind the Antichrist to kill that, knock out that other Babylon, the Roman Catholic Church. Revelation chapter 17. 18 is the U.S., 17 is the RCC, the Roman Catholic Church. God has a beef against that organization. And he will put it in the mind, and him and the Antichrist will have a common design: wipe her out. And so all those big cathedrals, everything in Rome, all this will be sacked and trashed. Because this Antichrist will be Luciferian. And I don't mean a closet one either. I mean out in your face, out in the open, Luciferian. I came to this conclusion, and it developed in my thinking. This is why the whole world, the thing is just going to change so rapidly in so many ways. The two prophets are Moses and Elijah. They were the miracle prophets. Of course, Moses, we know, water to blood as an example, and Elijah, fire out of heaven. They will suddenly appear where John the Baptist began his ministry. Outside Jerusalem, they're on the east side, back there along the Jordan, in that desert area. When you come up the backside of Jerusalem, you climb up. I'm talking about heading west, but coming to the backside of the city. You come up the roads, the switchbacks, up to the top up there. And down there is that area where John the Baptist was, and it is foreboding looking. It's white, it's sand, it's hot. That's where they're going to show up. And they will proceed immediately to preach the gospel to Israel, like John did, to prepare a people for the coming of the Lord, as much as it was possible to do so of the positive volition that was extant at the time when Jesus started his public ministry right after his baptism and started collecting his disciples and started his public ministry. And John got big acclaim in the ongoing of his ministry. They hadn't seen a prophet. How long? Not a public prophet like that. They hadn't seen anything like that. But he was a true prophet of God, of course, and he heralded the advent and prepared a people for the... So he started his ministry about 6 months before Jesus started his. They were cousins. Side note. Moses and Elijah will be preparing... First, they will evangelize Israel, and they are the ones who disciple the 144,000. The 144,000 carry on when they end their ministry for the second half of the tribulation. 144,000, that's a lot of Jewish males. All virgins. All from the different tribes except one, the tribe of Dan. I guess they didn't have enough to make up the 12,000 number. So that's 12 times 12, 144,000. And Moses and Elijah will bring, and the world can't ignore them. CNN can't ignore them. Nobody can ignore them. They are announcing environmental judgments all around the earth. And of course, the Antichrist and everyone else wants them dead, right? How hard would that be? Except God doesn't want them dead. So they can send any kind of assassin team they want in there. It'll be foiled. It'll be like, you can't get near them. You can't send a rocket in there and blow them up. You can't do anything. They'll be in their natural bodies. Because then the Antichrist will make war against them. And every attack will be blunted severely, shut down. And they will carry on for 3.5 years. I have a theory. I think in that war between them and the Antichrist, see, the Antichrist, he comes back and he's able to demonstrate who he is from history. that he's Alexander the Great. So we're, of all the things that archaeology or people are trying to find, there's a book out, and they're trying to find his body, his remains. It's called The Search for Alexander. And they have theories as to where he was buried. The latest one that seemed to be somewhat promising was Alexandria, a female archaeologist. When God's ready, he'll find his... He was interned Egyptian style, mummified. Because when he went and came to Egypt, and they received him in his conquest, when he was in his conquest, they received him with open arms. He didn't have to defeat them. And they made him a pharaoh, an honorary pharaoh. So his body will be found. He'll be able to prove who he is. It'll be sensational. And he will be located in Europe. U.S. will still be around when he makes his appearance. For some time, the U.S. will be over here, still before its destruction. And he will be like a whirlwind. Everything he does is successful. And he will take that weak European Union and pull it together. He'll get top lieutenants to run it. And he will start defeating nations. He'll put up with no nonsense. He'll wipe out the Catholic Church. Every battle he enters into, like Alexander of old, he never was defeated. Ever. Every battle. He was outgunned, outnumbered, but he had superior tactics and strategy. He will prove who he is. It'll be sensational. I think, get back to my idea, he is also... And at a certain point, he's assassinated. Who assassinates him? I think the two witnesses kill him. And God pops him right back. And the world goes bananas. Who can make war with the beast? And they will call him the beast. Well, I'll tell you who can make war with him. Of course, it's the Lamb. Sounds contradictory, doesn't it? The wrath of the Lamb. So they'll be having names for things in the tribulation. They'll call him the beast, among other things. And they'll call Christ the Lamb. It'll be announced everywhere. He's coming back. And of course, he will defeat Alexander and all the armies that gather at the very end, commonly known as the Armageddon event. So the two witnesses will be dropping these environmental judgments all over the earth. You can't ignore that. Polluting rivers. As often as they will, led by the Spirit of God, the wrath on the nations. Now in this verse, it talks about they finally, God has them taken into custody and beheaded. And the world goes crazy. I'll read it here. Revelation 11. I hadn't planned to do this, but I'll read verse 3. And I will grant authority to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1260 days, clothed in sackcloth. 1260 is the exact half of the trib, of the 7-year trib, based on an evaluation of a year based on 30 days in 12 months. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands that stand before the Lord of the earth. They're bigger than life, but they're just men, right? But prophets. And if anyone wants to harm them, and they do, fire flows out of their mouth and devours their enemies, so if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this fashion. Fire not coming literally out of their mouth. They speak it, and these people are incinerated. These have the power to shut up the sky. That means no rain. So the rain will not fall during the days of their prophesy. And they have power over the waters to turn them into blood. And to strike the earth with every plague as often as they wish. So you can see that with negative volition out there, they're not going to be popular. They're going to be hated ferociously. And frustrated for 3.5 years of this destruction. When they have finished their testimony, the beast that comes up out of the abyss. There's first line of evidence, people, that the Antichrist isn't a contemporary of the times in which he arises, like Hitler or somebody. He comes up out of the abyss, and the abyss means hell. He comes up. How does he come up out of the abyss? God brings him up out of there. His soul gives him a body so it can inhabit a body. And how do you know he isn't an imposter if he says he's some nutcase saying, I'm Alexander the Great? Well, if they find his sarcophagus, etc., etc., something will happen like that. I don't know the exact scenario. The beast that comes up out of the abyss will make war with them and overcome them and kill them. And of course, for the side of negative volition, this is a big coup. And this charges them all up. Yeah, we're going to win now. See? Alexander got him. And their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city. They'll put them on public display and they'll broadcast this picture everywhere of these two beheaded men laying on the street, out in the open, for everybody to see. Which mystically, symbolically, the great city, of course, is Jerusalem, is called Sodom and Egypt, where also their Lord was crucified. Their Lord meaning the two witnesses. Referring to Jesus, of course. So, why would you call it Sodom and Egypt? Jerusalem and the Jews over there, they're not by any means squeaky clean. They have gay pride parades. They do. So, that would be the Sodom side of things, I suspect. And the Egypt side of stuff is that they are into Masonic stuff. Their buildings and everything. Kind of like Washington, D.C. Masonic. And that would relate to Egypt and the Masonic orders with all their symbols and ritualistic stuff. All right, let's move on. Birds of a feather, verse 8. Yet in the same way, these men also by dreaming. Likewise, in the same way, yet, nevertheless, these men, and he's referring to the culprits that generated the writing of this letter, also by dreaming. Dreaming? And eupnazomai. Occurring here, present participle, it means to dream, it means to fantasize. Only two times here in Acts 2:17. Defile the flesh. Okay, here's the list, starting with these dreamers. They defile the flesh. defile is... Miano, present indicative. This word means if you were dealing with a garment, you mean you stained it. Here, defile flesh. There's no article. Defile flesh. And reject authority. The word reject here is authenteo, present indicative. To reject means to regard as nothing. Set aside something. Authority is kuriotes, the accusative feminine singular version. And revile, this means to badmouth, revile. We get our word blaspheme, blasphemeo. This means to slander, defame somebody. Run them down. Angelic majesties. This is accusative feminine plural of the verb glory, doxa. but it refers to a dignitary. They have, because of context and other factors involved, this has to do somehow with angels. They're part of their theology, if you will. One, Jude proceeds to link the behavior of the liberal heretics with the apostates stated in verses 5 through 7, as well as demonstrating a contrast with the conduct of Michael the archangel in verse 9. Here, back to another angel, an event. The words "yet in the same way" implies the grammatical link. The Greek construction begins with the adverb homoios, which means likewise or similarly. For next follows the correlative participle mentoi with the adversative de, with which the particle means but on the other hand. The translation, similarly, on the one hand. 6. In the Greek sentence, next comes the adjunctive use of the conjunction chi also. 7. In a different time and in a different context, these men follow the same mental and overt pattern of the notorious rebels cited in the three examples above. 8. Jude begins with the mental process that resulted in their rationalization and justification of sexual immorality, trying to sell believers that sexual immorality is okay. As there are in our world those who would try to tell us that. Note again, verse 3, who turned the grace of our God into sexual indulgence. I explained that. Hence the words, by dreaming up. Putting together a package, a system of rationale for people and exposing them to it. So the present participle to dream is used here in the sense of dream up, rather than in the sense of receiving an impression during sleep or of a supernaturally induced vision during sleep, as the one noted in Acts 2:17, where Peter is having... Is that right? No, that's not right. That's not right. As you... I just want to look it up real quick. Yeah, that's... In the last days, God says that I will pour forth my spirit on all flesh. That's millennial. And your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. And your young men shall see visions. And your old men dream dreams. Imagine keeping up with all that in the millennium with all these people getting divine revelation on things. They better have a system, I mean, to capture it for the benefit of people. But anyway, enough on that. The Colossian heresy involved the claim on part of certain individuals to visionary experiences to justify their doctrines. Colossians 2:18. So that we saw in Colossians. There's a lot of people out there that you need to avoid. I can say this over and over again, but I'll say it again, because I'm your shepherd and I want to protect you, but you've got to protect yourself. There are a lot of people making claims to visionary experiences, dreams, prophesying, false prophets, all kinds of stuff. Some of it has some truth in it mixed with the rest of it. The hook is the truth for dummy Christians that fall for it. Anyone who says they have a vision or had a vision that so-and-so is going to happen, they may have had a vision, but it wasn't of God. All those visions through time, Fatima of the Virgin Mary in Portugal, a whole series of stuff. And it persuades people and they buy this stuff. The devil is out to deceive. And he uses some high quality ammo to do it, to shoot us down. Let no one keep defrauding you. They were under attack of your prize. That's another synonym for the crown. Don't let anybody, it's like that verse in Revelation, let no man take your crown. So some outsider probably can't do it. It might have to be somebody that's dear and close to you, that wants to trip you up, that gets screwed up, that you trust, you love, you care about. You've got to be careful. I'm not trying to make anybody paranoid. Just when things don't sound right, it's because they're not right. They don't ring true. Stay away from that. Anybody can make a mistake and say something stupid. But I'm talking about a continual line of presentation of information to be avoided. If you have questions about it, ask somebody else if that sounds right. Or is it wrong? Because you're friendly, the person's nice, the person's this and this and this. You've got to be careful. I don't think, of course, I don't know. I don't think you're probably going to be taken in by somebody out there. Except some people are semi-addicted to YouTube videos of things that have some merit and others don't. I've had people, what do you send me this stuff. I wouldn't looked at it for 5 minutes. What? Yes, it had some things that were true with what we teach, but then this other stuff, based on some kind of a prophecy that wasn't in the Bible. Huh. You ought to shut that guy off right then and there. There's false prophecies, false prophets, false whatever's all over. So be careful. Please, defrauding you of your prize by delighting in self-abasement. What's that? Living a real ascetic life. Like in a monastery. I've given up all earthly pleasures. I wear drab clothes. Blah, blah, blah. A self-abasement. A pseudo form of spirituality. There's a lot of that that's going on in through time. Self-abasement. Or putting themselves through rigors. I know this from studying some little bit of church history. Some of the crazy stuff some of these people did in these monasteries and various things. Lay out in the open, naked in the weather. What? And that's supposed to make you spiritual. Endure and put yourself through all this stuff. I'm all for the earthly comforts. As long as they don't interfere with Bible doctrine. But if they wear certain clothes, do certain things, oh, that looks spiritual. No, it is not. Self-abasement and the worship of angels. I saw a guy on TV. He prayed to his guardian angel. It's been a long time. I heard the nut say this. You don't worship angels. John, the apostle, in the virtual thing with giving him all this information in the book of Revelation, when he was confronted with an angel, he fell down before it. And the angel said, stop it. Do not do that. Worship God, not me. And he's telling Apostle John to do that, late stage of his life. If you were, and you won't be, but I don't think, if you were in the presence of a glamorous, glorious, elect angel, would you be tempted to fall down at his feet? If it happens, don't do it. He'll rebuke you. And the worship of angels. Taking his stand on visions he has seen. Inflated without a cause by his fleshly mind. He's running under his sin nature. We say, why do people just make up stuff? They do. You may not be the kind of person that does that. Well, hopefully you aren't. You wouldn't be here. You just make up some vision or you actually saw something. Don't put any stock in it. We got everything we need right here in the Bible. We don't need this stuff. And not holding fast to the head. What's that mean? Christ, the head of the church. And how do you hold fast to somebody you can't see? It's in heaven. You hold fast to the truth. From whom the entire body, being supplied and held together by the joints and ligaments, grows with a growth which is from God. Under the right conditions, that happens. Okay. These heretics indulged in wishful thinking. Their dreaming applies to three actions, which Jude goes on to specify. The false teachers are arraigned for sex lust, rebellion, and irreverence. We'll pick that up Tuesday night. Let's everyone get in our place so we can observe the Lord's table.